CinemaSins has a fan club. It's called the Sin Club, and members get all sorts of things like early episodes, bonus videos, merch discounts, and even monthly bonus podcasts. Membership starts at $3 a month, and you can sign up now at patreon.com/CinemaSins.
He walks by the sleeping guy and just mindlessly chop, 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 chop,
yeah,
chop.
Yeah.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkins from CinemaSins, joined by Jeremy Scott.
What?
Huh? And Barrett Scher.
Hey!
And Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
Today we're going to be doing a mini pod.
Squatty pod.
Harley pod.
Squatty pod.
This is our squatty second pod. Squatty pod. Can you believe that?
I can.
This was that summer where you guys decided to go see everything, and it was a terrible summer, if I remember correctly. Because wasn't that like Ghostbusters and Bourne something? Jason Bourne.
Yeah, Jason Bourne. Yeah,
Independence Day resurgence.
Of course, this movie is no different. It's added a "the" to it, and it's suddenly a different movie.
It's the final destination of the Suicide Squad.
The final
movies.
Destination, yes. Fast and Furious, not the Fast and Furious, and the Furious. So you're either dropping the "thes" or you're adding the "thes," and it makes it a new product. But yes, we're going to be doing a mini pod on the Suicide Squad, a movie that. It didn't go to the box office. Didn't go away with a lot of money, did it? It did okay, did decent. But it's gotten great reviews, and we figured we'd review it as well. So let's take the temperature of our panel. Review. And what did you guys think of it?
Chris, did you see this in the theater, or did you watch?
No,
it?
No, I saw it on HBO Max.
Jonathan,
me too.
Same thing.
Yep.
Okay, so we all watched it at home. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
All right. So you just want to go through real quick. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Would you like to add non-spoiler things to your enjoyed it and why?
Oh, for sure. I thought it was really clever. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really weird.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of really colorful imagery and, frankly, surprisingly interesting camera work that I wasn't expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And I laughed a lot. There you go. Mm-hmm. That's my spoiler free.
There you go. Barrett.
You know, I enjoyed this. I think I was a bit of a victim of too high expectations, which is my own fault. But I was a little bit geeked with this because I had saw the advanced word of mouth. You saw the trailers were fantastic for this. They really were. And I enjoyed it. We'll get into it a little bit. I think there was a little bit, I say this a lot, but a little bit too much indulgence in a certain kind of a subgenre, I guess. But, I mean, there is no comparison in my mind with this and the first movie.
Oh,
first
my
movie
God.
For many reasons. Is a tire fire.
I agree with
this
that.
This is eminently watchable, very enjoyable. I think there was a little bit to be desired, but I enjoyed myself.
Well, and this doesn't feel like the first one just is cut up all to hell, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's studio interference and all that stuff. This is definitely feels like a complete vision. I cannot believe somebody got $185 million to make this movie. Probably not since like Batman Returns. Have I been like, just like, how did this movie get financed and made at that level? And so for that, I commend it in a way. It's hard not to enjoy it a little bit on that level. I didn't like the movie, though, when all was said and done.
Mm-hmm.
You did not like the movie?
No, not really. Wow. I thought it was intermittently funny. I think Stallone and Robbie pretty much stole the movie. Those were the two that I enjoyed the most. And so I did laugh occasionally. I geeked out a few times, but like, I don't know, just overall, I couldn't really connect with it. I just didn't really enjoy it. I didn't like it.
Okay. Chris? I did enjoy this. I thought at the beginning we were in for a rough ride, because they do this, they have this conversation about what this weasel character is. And it's like, is it a dog or is it a, what kind of dog is it? And blah, blah, blah. And it just feels unnatural. Like, it just felt like this is just not going anywhere for a while. I was like, are we going to have a bunch of like things where they stop in the middle of the action to discuss things like this? Like they're like, it's Quentin Tarantino doing the dialogue or something like that. And then it slowly won me over, because there's a scene somewhere that we'll get into the spoilers, that I thought the comedy was ratcheted up pretty well, and this big scene has a nice punchline to all the action that happens. And
I know
maybe
what
you're
talking about.
Yeah, I think you know what I'm talking about. I thought the ending of this movie was a little overlong. That's what contributes to the 2-hour 12-minute runtime. It just feels like it's almost over and it's got 30 minutes left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's another strike against it. So if we're grading these before we get into spoilers, I would give this a solid B.
I would give it a B+.
Wow. I thought I was going to be much lower than you guys, but I'm right in that same thing. It's a B for right now. I wish, man, why don't movies just trim that 8 to 10 minutes? Tighten it up, and it would be near an A for me, near somewhere around there.
There's a solid 80 minutes here. Like, there's a solid 80 to 90 minute movie here, right? I'm giving it a C. I mean, I'm not dogging it completely. I mean, I didn't hate it, but I didn't like it. I was very much in the middle with it, so I'm giving it a C.
I mean,
go ahead.
I think it's pretty clear that they gave him free rein, both in terms of the story and the budget. And I think that's part of why it's 2 hours and 12 minutes long. When we get into spoilers, I have one specific section that I think is pointless that I would cut, that would free up about 20 minutes. And then the finale also needs a little trimming, but, I think it's pretty clear he had absolute final say in everything.
Yeah, let me change what I said a little bit. I don't have a problem with it being 2 hours and 12 minutes. I'm just saying, I think maybe there is like a 80 to 100 minutes there that makes it just a little tighter. But the part of what I respect about this movie, and part of what I kind of dig about it, is the fact that he was just, I don't know, something about just giving like some crazy dude like James Gunn $185 million and just like, here you go.
Yeah, and it's odd because they reportedly called him within 24 hours of him being fired from Marvel.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to believe, you know, the unlimited budget or what, you know, anything under $200 million was promised pretty early, because I think he's even said he thought about doing Superman. Like, they gave him kind of like free reign for all their properties, and this is the one he wanted to make because he clearly loves, you know, lovable losers who do bad things for good reasons.
I feel like his love of like his work with Troma and Lloyd Kaufman, I think that was something that probably appealed to him too with the Suicide Squad, because you could kind of play around in that type of area. Like you could throw the Toxic Avenger in here and it would make sense.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's interesting. And this does lead me to believe that maybe Warner Brothers is giving a little more creative control to these things now. So this, even though I didn't like this a ton, this makes me a little more interested in The Flash and some of these movies that are going to be coming, you know, down the road.
Maybe they realized that their control wasn't helping before this.
It's a big deal, right? Because, okay, when you have unfettered director's vision, you get Zack Snyder's Justice League. When you have studio interference, vapid studio interference, you get the theatrical version of Justice League, or you get the first
Suicide
version
Squad.
Of Suicide Squad, right? Or Spider-Man 3. Do editors not have any like say over, is the director just the director of the project and they're It doesn't seem like an editor, and of course we're not in the room, and I'm not in the room, and I'm talking out of my ass here, but it doesn't feel like there's a Thelma Schoonmaker or something like that for every Scorsese that can say like, you know what? No, maybe we trim 10 minutes off of this and tighten it up. It's a weird example, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I wish some people would get a little more, know people in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows who is responsible ultimately for whatever. I mean, would we know if James Gunn got final cut on this? Like, would we know that for sure?
Because I have seen him make several statements like, they didn't make any suggestions for me to change any characters. I was allowed to use anybody I wanted. I've seen him make a few statements like that, but I haven't seen him outright say I had final cut. Mm-hmm. But he seems to have been quite pleased with how much room they gave him.
So two editors worked on this. I just looked really quick. I was curious. One is Fred Raskin, who did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And he looks like he does a lot of work with Tarantino, but he also did Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And then the other guy's Christian Wagner, who did True Romance, Man on Fire, Face Off.
Tony Scott guy.
Yeah.
Well, basically. From what I understand, I think in this case, Gunn would have been in the room when the edits were being made.
I'm sure.
He had the authority to overwrite them. And of course, this is the opposite of the rumor of what happened with the first one, is that they didn't like Ayer's cut. They got nervous and they had the trailer guy cut the movie. It's the rumor that I've heard. And so in that case, then Ayer did not have control over that edit. It's kind of murky.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know. It's hard to know what goes into all these type of things. It's all speculation. I always think about stuff like Kathleen Kennedy firing Lord and Miller over the mm-hmm. Solo production and you know, how, you know, they're hiring directors that they think will give them the movie that they want. But if they trail off what they've originally agreed on, then there's problems. So I think directors can make any movie they want to make as long as they stay in the lane. And you know, this is what's probably happened here with this movie. James Gunn was basically given a wide lane to do what he wanted.
I just want to be in this pitch room, though. I want Gunn to be telling. I want to see him telling WB execs. Okay, so this one guy is called Polka Dot Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I bet the crazier the pitch, the more they ate it up.
Probably. Yeah.
Let's go on to the spoilers on this movie.
And this basically is Kaiser Soze.
Luke's father is actually Darth Vader. She's the sister and the daughter. They just
No. I'm reading the books.
My favorite moment in this movie is when they're killing all those dudes, and it's Peacemaker and the Idris Elba character that we know we're going to mess up a million times, Bloodsport, going around and like showing off, basically. What?
He walks by the sleeping guy and just mindlessly chop, 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 stabs him with the axe and then leaves it in his chest and keeps walking. That fucking kills me.
They kill all these guys because they've been told that Flag's been kidnapped or whatever. And so why wouldn't they think that these are bad guys who took him? And everything, and by the end of it, they find Flag is completely fine. He's sitting there talking to Alice Braga or whatever, and they're just kind of having a cordial conversation. Now, who knows why they couldn't hear all that commotion outside? I'll never understand that. But the fact is, they were the freedom fighters that are trying to overthrow
the
corrupt government.
Out of them too, man. They absolutely every new kill is an adventure, and that's why that casual, because Cena like goes up and slits somebody's throat, like does something really egregious, and that's mm-hmm. when he casually walks by and just does that chop 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 like he's cutting roast beef at a buffet. It's the greatest.
Some dude also, with his dick hanging out, walks by the window and just blow him away.
I really enjoyed.
I did like this moment. It was great.
I really enjoyed the Polka Dot Man character throughout.
Yes.
I love that actor.
In this scene when he does his thing and John Cena's like, he really does throw polka dots at people. And he just says, I don't like killing, but when I picture my mother, it's so much easier. Yeah. This is before you've gotten any of the backstory on his mother.
When they call him Norman Bates later, right? Doesn't somebody call him Norman Bates?
Yeah.
I almost wish that they didn't expand on that joke at all. Like, didn't give us any like backstory about her, his mom being the one that got him this virus that he has. You know, never showing like all the different, you know, moms as the characters throughout, although those can be pretty funny at times when he's looking, you see his perspective and everybody is his mom, but it's such a much greater joke if they don't ever explain it. And he just says, I just imagine everybody's my mom. And then just, we don't hear anything else after that.
I agree. Cause that's like, kind of like with the rat catcher and the King Shark characters, like they don't really explain a lot of that. They just kind of let them be that, you know, and I think that's funny. You know, I think that's a little more interesting. I agree with you on that. That's a David Dastmalchian. I don't know if that's how you say his last name.
I would assume Dastmalchian.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's been around for a minute. He had a really memorable role on the TV show The Flash, actually, as Abracadabra. But
he's been in a lot of DC, and he was in Ant-Man as well.
Yeah, he's also in he was in Prisoners, the Villeneuve movie. He's probably going to kind of blow up this year, which I'm glad about, because he's also in Dune. Yeah. So that'll be cool.
As an aside, we had a sin in the Dark Knight video about that guy, and we said, I think it was something to the effect of, how does Batman know this guy is from the asylum or whatever?
Yeah.
And we had some comment where somebody was like, that Scarecrow from the last movie. And I was like,
oh, that was him.
This is the kind of fucking bullshit.
No. I'm saying this was the guy that got that guy. I've heard this story before. I'm just saying I forgot that was that actor that was in that scene, though, that somebody said was Scarecrow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was early days YouTube where you're just like, how do you deal with these fuckers? I mean, it's like you think that guy is Scarecrow, even though you saw the real Scarecrow earlier in the movie. OK, anyway,
how does this movie have more pop music cues than the last Suicide Squad? That's what I want to
know. Well, it's James Gunn, though. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy has those too.
Yes, but I bet you if you counted them, there's way more here. Probably because Marvel says, no, James, only 5. And DC said, 15? Sure. I got to like halfway through the movie and I thought, because that's the biggest thing that stood out to me in the first Suicide Squad. Because in the opening, there's like 6 different song cues in the first 15 minutes. And I was surprised by how much pop music there was in this film, even though it's James Gunn. But I did love the opening titles one. I was not familiar with that song. That these are people who died.
Heard that song? Oh my god!
I don't think so.
I would have thought you would have heard that. Wow, that's an awesome song.
The grandson song. Oh yeah, that's over the credits, the end credits. I've listened to that probably 1,000 times since I watched it.
I would say James Gunn's probably responsible for the music, but that's also a Zack Snyder thing, who's a producer on this movie, of putting a lot of these like songs over a lot of different things. Now, who knows if James Gunn was the guy who said, hey, we need a lot of songs, or if it was somebody like Zack Snyder who came in and said, yeah, man.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if Zack Snyder actually came up with the mother thing with Polka Dot Man? That would be kind of funny.
Martha. Right.
Really good, James, but you should make him see his mother all the time, and you should bring attention to it. Call him Norman Bates.
It'll be
funny.
Because David Ayer said something to the effect of, there's no fucking pop music in my cut of the Suicide Squad. And of course, if they did hire a trailer editor, the first 15 minutes of that movie is now perfectly explained, because that is exactly what a trailer editor would put together. But anyway,
think about the difference in the openings, though. I mean, now, mind you, we know some of these characters already, because I forget, you know, we forget Harley was introduced in Suicide Squad and like Boomerang and Flag. But even with that, I mean, they throw so many characters at we've never heard of before. And it doesn't matter. Like, it's fine. Like, the way they do it is fine. Whereas if you go back and watch Suicide Squad, like you said, it's like 7 or 8. 10-minute introductions for like every fucking character.
Yep.
I got no time. I just send this in a recent video, but this En Medio Res thing is getting so tired for me of the 1 week ago. You know, I wonder how I got here. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I understand why they did it in this movie, but is it necessary? No, I don't think so. And that's part of the thing that could be tightened up.
The on-screen text for all that shit I thought was brilliant. And at least tried to be creative.
For the like transitions?
Meanwhile with Harley, or the dust rolls in and it says now. On the
Operation beam. Operation Harley, right?
Yeah. I thought all that stuff was really cool. Even the Jotunheim one at the end. Much better than the
graffiti in the original one.
Yeah.
And their stats.
Yeah. Can we talk about the opening a little bit, though? I'm really kind of confused about some of this, though, because so they do the whole thing where, you know, Joel Kinnaman comes in and is like, you know, Michael Rooker's characters who were introduced to, right?
Yep.
He's like being introduced to the new team. And that's where you get like, you got the Javelin guy, you've got
Big Dick Pete, DK,
Weasel.
Yeah. Murray. And then, Pete Davidson, Nathan Fillion is TDK. Nathan Killaman. What the hell am I doing
Blood
here?
Bloodsport, Bloodshot, Deadpool.
So we find out I guess she's setting them up so she can get the other team in. But the only thing that confuses me about that is like, so she's giving Kinnaman's character up, though? Like, that kind of confused me. Although she does have them go after him. And she puts Harley on that team.
No, that's the thing, is that that doesn't make sense. We'll have to send that. Harley Kinnaman.
Yeah,
they don't belong on that team. But if he doesn't write them on that team, he doesn't hook you the way he wants.
Absolutely.
When he starts killing everybody off, you think this is the team in that opening scene until everybody starts dying, and it's like, I see where we're going, and then he just has to convenience that Harley and Rick Flag stay alive, even though they should. She's absolutely sacrificing all of them.
I love how that teaser is literally a lie. the first teaser, because that's who you get introduced to, is basically all those guys, and then they do show like Polka Dot Man and stuff. But and I can't say I was upset that I didn't want to watch Pete Davidson play that character for 2 hours. I'm sorry. No. And I didn't want to see Jai Courtney again. I didn't know. So I was okay with some of this.
Or Michael Rooker with his Nelson hair.
That was weird.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. Although the Harley Quinn thing later on where she escapes is really funny, too. It's another one of those where they drop
I can go back in.
Yeah.
No, that's so good. I'll tell you what, the action sequences, both that one where they go into the rebel camp and the one where Harley escapes, where it's a mashup of Suicide Squad and Birds of Prey, in that in Birds of Prey, it was only confetti and all that stuff. What is it? Dan buys a maze, John buys a maze, or whatever. That thing where they have confetti instead of blood.
It's build a maze.
Dave
builds a maze or something like that.
Which,
so they use that a lot in Birds of Prey, which I thought was brilliant. I thought that was beautifully done. But in this one, you get the gore, and then it turns into her perception of it with all the Paisleys and the hallucinations. And I thought, and her acting in this, you know, it's a character you can only do so much with, I think, given the constraints of the scripts. But I think she nailed it.
I think she keeps getting better. And I love Birds of Prey. I think Birds of Prey is better than this, but I think she keeps getting better. Like, this was some of my favorite Harley stuff, like the stuff with the dictator or the general, whatever he was.
It's so good.
And then we already talked about her breaking out and having that little moment with Flag. And then the Milton thing was kind of silly, but she pulled it off. Like, she made that joke work, even though it wasn't a great joke, maybe. But I don't know. It just, when she called him Milton at the end,
that's
it was so funny.
Well, yeah, that one was better than the whole breakdown of Polka Dot Man being mad.
Yeah, that was weird.
I thought the better joke, again, like Chris was saying, somebody said earlier that a joke kept going when it would have been funnier if it just, the mom joke. Mm-hmm. Much like that, I think it would have been a lot better if we, what are we talking about?
The Milton thing.
The Milton thing. Because they're loading up. They're putting up their guns and they're gearing up, yeah. And Milton grabs a gun, yeah. And Bloodsport's like, well, no, like, what the fuck are you thinking? And that could have been the joke. Yeah. And then he very clearly starts following them, and then I felt like they overdid it.
Yeah.
The one scene that I don't think needs to be there, even though there's some memorable stuff in there, is the scene when they drive from the Freedom Fighter camp in the van, in the normal clothes, to the gentleman's club just to kidnap Doctor Who. And then they get themselves kidnapped into a car accident in an exact spot they programmed on a GPS. None of that has any bearing on the story. Mm-mm. Like, the Freedom Fighters could have just already captured the Thinker guy, and it's on to Jotunheim. And we get some character development in there, but not a ton, because it's mostly like the shark going, I can disguise with mustache, and they make jokes about that. And then we get the rat. We get why Bloodsport hates rats. That's basically what we get out of that scene. Mm-hmm. And that is another one of my complaints, is that I feel like this movie's being praised for having a lot of heart, and I don't get that.
I don't either, and I don't think it's really intended to have heart.
I think it is. I think, just from what I've read, Gunn really likes these characters, like, yeah. The raccoon in the first movie, in Guardians, and then Weasel. He really loves these losers. And there's so much work done in this script to try and make it have heart. Like when Polka Dot Man tells his story about why he hates his mom, and then Rat Girl tells the story about Rat Daddy dying, and then Bloodsport tells a story about being covered in rats. And I'm just like, you know, enough. They're criminals. They're doing this because they got a thing in their head. You don't have to convince me there's like... She keeps saying the rat sees good in you. And I'm just like, you just wasted 15 seconds of the movie. Stop
hey, it. Can I talk just real quick about wasting?
No.
Because...
Okay. Anyways.
No, go ahead.
There's two characters in this that I don't know why they went out and got. Now, to a latter, a smaller extent, Storm Reed, who is at the beginning of her career, but is a dynamic actress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But man, when I see Taika Waititi in the opening credits, I expect to see him for more than 15 fucking total.
There is seconds. A story behind that, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
What is the story?
Well, he was originally going to, I don't remember who he was going to play. I don't know that they've ever said who he was going to play, but then he started working on Akira. And then he was going to direct a live action version of Akira. And then that fell apart. And when it fell apart, he basically went back to Gunn. They had already cast that role, but he was like, dude, but come on. So, I mean, it was just kind of a
interesting.
It was just kind of a favor type thing. So
okay. A couple of things I want to retread real quick, because everybody was talking about points in the movie. It's Dave Made a Maze is what the movie is called.
Cool.
Awesome.
The other thing was, I was going to talk about, you know, we were talking about how Flag is in that team, that's the decoy team and everything. Mm-hmm. Since Gunn is already putting in some of his old actors from Guardians and other movies in this, why couldn't it have been somebody like Chris Pratt leading that team?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure there might have been even thoughts. I'm completely out of my depth here saying this, but maybe there were talks where they said, hey, Chris Pratt, would you like to be in this for a second so that I can do this scene in the movie? And he wasn't available. But I think it would have made it better to have another kind of like name actor who doesn't mind getting paid peanuts to come in for 5 minutes of the movie. I know 5 minutes is actually more like a month of your time, but it might have been fun to put somebody other than Flag in there. And so you put somebody like Chris Pratt in there and run it. You really get sold on the fact that this must be the, mm-hmm. you know, you're not thinking about any other team or anything at that point.
Yeah.
Especially if they put the trailers like that, like introducing, you know, like, you know, Chris Pratt, like mm-hmm. have him as a headliner and everything. Yeah. That would have been
the
cool.
The trailers could have sold everything a little better, but the money men wouldn't have let them hide, you know, Idris Elba and King mm-hmm. Shark and all that stuff. If they'd have only ever shown us that team in the first 10 minutes, that would have been a true rug pull. But this is one of those movies that really puts me in the middle of Dicer's no watching trailers and me watching trailers. Because if you're Dicer and you're going to see everything, then all this movie's surprises are fun.
But of course, I don't think he liked this movie very much. But if you're me, the only reason I'm watching this movie is because the trailer sold me. I was already, I was not on board until the trailer. But then when I saw the movie, there were like four really fun moments that I just, I was unable to laugh at because I had seen them already. And I really felt like jealous of Dicer for about 30 seconds.
Yeah, because they showed, didn't they show, in, wasn't there a Red Band trailer where they showed King Shark pulling the guy apart?
Yes.
And yeah, like there was, there were some moments that probably I would have been a little Harley more breaking wild.
Out. Harley saying, I'm already broken out. I can go back in. The trailer had them interrogating the, if you get, if you have parking tickets, you're dead or whatever that joke was.
My favorite part of that was when she just said, I'm walking back and forth.
Yeah.
This,
she's so awesome.
This may have one of the more devastating final lines of a bad guy that I've seen in a movie in a while. You remember the, you know, it's this starfish and he's throwing all these baby starfish on every, on all these people. And they become controlled by the starfish. And at the very end, we see one of the people with the starfish on his face. And he says, I was just looking at the stars out in the sky, you know, in the sky.
I was perfectly happy. Yeah.
Yeah. Aww. I was perfectly happy. And you think about the story that this movie's told, the Americans have gone into space. They've basically taken this starfish and they've done all this experiments and everything. And then they bring it back to Earth. And I mean, you start, this is what I like about villains in movies that have a reason. They're not just pure evil and everything.
Yeah.
That is one of the most devastating things I've ever heard. I think a lot of people might miss this line actually, at the end of this movie, because it sounds like some just regular, I mean, it doesn't sound like much of anything. People can just kind of gloss over while that happens, but God, that hit me, man. That hit me hard.
Wow. Yeah. I'll have to rewatch that bit. I do remember the line, but I will say I was kind of checked out. Cause like you were talking about earlier, and I think I liked it even less, that final battle, just, I lost interest so quickly in that final battle. There's also the scene though, where Polka Dot Man, you know, makes that, you know, fires at the legs or whatever, and, you know, makes it fall over. And then he's like, I'm a fucking superhero. And then he gets killed.
Yeah. I also, I wonder about these. I've seen now three iterations of Suicide. Oh, actually four iterations of Suicide Squads. And like, I always wonder how the team is picked. Like, there's a bit of a joke in this movie where they throw the weasel into the water and they're like, you didn't know he couldn't swim? Like, and they look at the one dude who's apparently the guy who gets all this team to get together and everything. But I sit there and I go, if you're about to do this mission where you're trying to you know, secure a flash drive to make sure that nobody knows that you took the starfish down here. That's pretty much it, right? They were trying to make sure the flash drive was secure. If you're doing that, why do you pick the person who can call rats? Like, the rats are important at the end, but how do you know that the rats are going to be important at the end? You know, if you're doing this, you don't want to have somebody who can just call rats at command. I don't understand the point of that. Like, you have at that Bell Rev or whatever it is that she's keeping all these criminals, there's probably like 100 other people that could do better job than someone who could just pull up a light and make sure and be like the Pied Piper or something, you know? So yeah. I know that a lot of the times the choices are made to be humorous, and that's the point of them and everything. But I just think within the body of the movie, why would you pick the rat person?
Or even like Polka Dot Man, who's a guy that clearly has no confidence in any of his abilities. Why would you throw him in the middle of a top mission like that? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But
although his attacks are devastating, though.
Oh, no, they are. But I'm just saying personally, like he's not aware, like he doesn't, like you can just tell, like he's not a very like confident person. He's not a fighter, you know.
I think I laughed as hard at the end when it cuts back to the beach and Weasel wakes up and starts screeching and runs away as I did at anything else in the whole fucking movie.
No, this is just because this is James Gunn's brother, right?
Yeah, yes. Sean Gunn. And he also apparently, the Calendar Man's in, like, I didn't even catch this.
Yeah,
I saw people
one line.
I saw people complaining about it. What was the...
Because people will complain about anything.
I didn't know people loved Calendar Man that much.
They like, no one did. They no one don't. Knew that.
It's like living Condiment King or something. Yes.
But that reminds me of another thing. There's that character that shows up out of nowhere, and they said he's been here the whole time. Yeah, and it's like, I didn't know him. I didn't see him this whole time. It's like, oh yeah, is his name Malcolm or something?
Milton.
Like that?
Yeah.
Milton.
That's the Milton guy.
Because I was sitting there going, who the fuck is this guy? And then like he gets killed, and they're like, who was that? It's Milton. He's been with us the whole time.
Oh, I forgot. Oh, and the thing about the weasel, though, I will say, though, that is, I mean, I think, Chris, we talked about this when we did that attack. Was it Arkham? Assault on Arkham or whatever that movie was, that there's all that is a thing in the comics where it's almost like a Spinal Tap drummer. Like they'll start the mission and one of them always immediately gets killed.
Yeah.
They'll just throw in some random bad guy and then kill them in the comics.
Well, that even happened in the first Suicide Squad with
It was the West Studi character. I can't remember who he was now, but yeah.
I don't want to remember.
He jumped on the building and then he got his head blown up.
Yes, he did. I could have sworn it was Boomerang from the last movie. Boomerang and was Jack Courtney. Oh, he's back in this one? All right, whatever.
Yeah, it was like him and I guess it was kind of like at the end, him and Will Smith and Margot Robbie were kind of like the three that, you know, the team or whatever. I don't know. But I don't remember.
Big fire guy was.
He was around too. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck was he in this movie?
Where was Will Smith? Hey, what are you guys going through the cast? We haven't talked about all of a sudden I can't think of people's names. John Cena. I don't really know that I get this. I don't get John Cena as a movie star. I don't know what it is, but do you guys like him? Like
Dave Bautista.
Mm-hmm. In this role, I thought he was great.
I didn't like him in this at all. I think Dave Bautista in Guardians of the Galaxy is more interesting than John Cena in this movie.
I disagree.
Oh, you guys like Bautista in Guardians? The first one. I don't like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
I like Dave Bautista Dave Bautista in both of those Guardians of the Galaxy. I like him also in the Blade Runner 2049. I think he's good in that. But I do like John Cena in this. It's not an either or for me.
Oh no, I understand.
But John Cena is funny. I mean, during the last Sincast we recorded, I was talking about how I love that scene where he's like, "Starfish is a slang for a butthole. Do you think that's gonna come up?" And she's just like, "No." And he goes, "No." He's writing the notes.
And it's off
down.
Camera too. I didn't realize it's off camera. It already shifts back to her perspective. You just hear him in the background go, "No."
I did like Waller better in this than I did in I think that probably has a lot to do with the writing and directing and stuff. But I liked how they played with Waller and I the stuff with her and her team was amusing at times and you know. And then that woman at the end that just takes her out.
that was a nice little thing at the end where Waller looks over at those two people and she's like, one of you fucking knocked me out. I'm going to find out who the fuck that is and everything by the end of, and they're just kind of working like, doo, 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 nothing happened. I do like that. Okay. Anything else to talk about this movie before we wrap up?
Fuck it.
Okay. Fuck it. That's right. Fuck it. Okay. So we all basically kind of liked this except for Jonathan.
Yeah, I'm an asshole.
Jonathan's the asshole. Send hate mail to. No. But that's going to do it for this mini pod.
Squatty Bob.
Keep going to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter, SoundCloud, and Discord. That's going to do it for this mini pod. It's Chris Atkinson, Jeremy Scott, Barrett Scher, and Jonathan Watkins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.